is the kingdom of God. Amen. So you've been tuned to 90.7 FM, The Pep House. I'm Charles, your host. Charles Hysaw, that's H-Y-S-A-W. And I've had a great time, and I had a couple phone calls. I couldn't get to you. Sorry about that, but we are going to make sure that we start receiving those phone calls. And again, thanks for all your emails, reaching out to me and sending me new artists. Again, my email is KBO, the Pep House, 30 minutes at KBOO.org. And just send some out to me, and guess what? We will get back to you, okay? Because I know there's more artists out here in our community, and we definitely want to hear them. Again, next week is the program will be International Women's Day, and we're going to be having some interviews, and I'm going to have some more people coming in. Going out right now is my brother Michael Tate. Song entitled The Intro. Check you out next week.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Tune in to KBOO every third Saturday at 10 p.m. for Query.
Dive into the spectrum of queer music as we explore artists across time and genre.
She's on my mind every hour of every day.
That's Query, every third Saturday at 10 p.m.
The things we could do, oh, it takes my breath away.
Here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And I lose control, think I follow home.
Hello, I'm your host, Donald Altman, and welcome to Pathways, where you're invited to join us for a visit with leaders in personal and cultural transformation. The world is awash in competing and often confusing ideologies trying to win us over to their side. Political ideologies, for example, seek to attain power rather than producing peace. They divide us into good and bad, as in essence saying, you're either with us or against us. We need to find a better way to promote harmony both personally and in the community. Interestingly, there's an ancient philosophy that seems to do just that. Stoicism has become more popular as a means to finding peace within oneself while also tending to the community with a sense of virtue and goodwill. But what is Stoicism, and why is it garnering all this attention? To help explore these topics is Tanner Campbell. Tanner is an American philosopher of Stoicism living in the United Kingdom. He is the producer and host of Practical Stoicism. That's a podcast. In fact, Podcast Magazine named him as one of the top 22 influencers in the podcasting field. Tanner is co-author, along with Kai Whiting, of a new book, What is Stoicism? A Brief and Accessible Overview. And I really enjoyed this book, and so it's an honor to have and a pleasure to have Tanner Campbell here with us today. Hello, Tanner, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
Great to be here.
You know, maybe we should start at the beginning. You make the point in your book that being stoic, you know, someone who's maybe impassive or unemotional, is not the same as being a stoic or adhering to stoicism. Maybe you could explain that for us and also give us a little bit of the history and a definition of what really is stoicism about.
Sure. So I think in contemporary times, a lot of us view the word stoic to mean something like a judge. When we think of someone being stoic, they have a great poker face. They don't show their emotions. In fact, they may be compartmentalizing their emotions away from what could be thought of as their primary job. So a judge needs to do that. Someone on the battlefield needs to do that. And so this kind of stoicism, which we talk about in the book as being lowercase s stoicism, is not in and of itself a bad thing to have given the appropriate circumstances. Sometimes we need to have that ability. But for some reason, and I blame the internet, it's easy. what's the old saying, that a lie makes it halfway around the world before the truth has a chance to put on its pants. And that's something like what goes on with the contemporary understanding and pop culture of Stoicism, that it actually means to be withdrawn from your emotions, to get rid of your emotions, to, in some cases, not even think that things like love or care for people beyond your immediate family are things you should actually concern yourself with. And that is untrue. Stoicism, uppercase S, is a virtue ethics framework, the whole point of which is to acquire a very specific kind of knowledge, which the ancient Stoics would have called arete, in Latin, it's called virtue. And that is the knowledge of how to live excellently, or the knowledge of how to, as I like to put it, although I didn't put it this way in the book, how to acquire perfect contextual moral reason. The ability to know what is the correct thing to do in every scenario as it applies to you, your roles, and who you are. So virtue looks different for everyone because everyone has a different set of circumstances, lives in a different part of the world, has a different background, have different roles and responsibilities. And Stoicism wants us to figure out how to reason toward, given our context, our roles, and all those things I mentioned, reason toward what is the correct thing for us to do at any given moment.
Yeah, now, you know, earlier I drew the difference between political ideologies and Stoicism because it seems that Stoicism doesn't try to judge others for not being Stoic. It's not proselytizing others to a particular point of view. Would that be accurate?
Yes, and the reason for that, I would say, is because if virtue is knowledge, knowledge exists in the mind. We cannot know someone else's mind, so we cannot know if they have virtue. We cannot know whether or not their choices are virtuous because we don't know their circumstances or conditions. We don't know how they reason themselves to their answers. And so in that way, we can't judge others. We can only say things like, there's a great example that comes to us from antiquity that is something like, don't say that he had too much to drink. Say that he had 10 drinks, because you can't know if he had too much to drink or not. Don't say that this person has made a stupid decision. Say that this person has made a decision. You may then perceive it to be stupid, and that's, you're able to do that, of course, and plenty of politicians and people who like to talk about politics do that. But yeah, by and large, Stoics do not judge other Stoics' stoicness in the way that we can sometimes see in religion, people judging that other person's level of religiosity or religiousness.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's kind of lacking in a, which is a good thing, lacking in this kind of moral superiority.
It does, yeah. At least I feel it does. Some might disagree with me, but I definitely feel that way.
You know, it's interesting. You know, I had read, maybe people are familiar with Marcus Aurelius's Meditations. And as I remember it, it had a lot of practical, you know, how do you deal with these situations in real life? And even though it was centuries ago, it was applied to today. Your book gave me a real nice kind of a framework of the principles of Stoicism and how virtue or being good was very important as opposed to vice or viciousness, as you described it in the book. Could you maybe talk about those principles of virtue and good and why that's so important to Stoicism?
Sure. So this will sound a little bit religious as I say it. And I've been in so many conversations that I know some people will think that, so I'm preempting. But everyone who is not a sage, that is to say, someone who has not obtained the knowledge of virtue, which one can only have a complete knowledge of virtue. You can't be kind of virtuous, sort of virtuous, virtuous on Tuesdays, but not virtuous on Wednesdays. You have to be completely virtuous. If you're not a sage, which is a person who's attained that knowledge, then you are vicious, which will sound a lot like you are either a sinner or you're not, right? There'll be some crossover there with religion. The reason that the Stoics believe it's important to, first of all, identify the words good and vice, arete and evil or viciousness as being knowledge and the lack of knowledge is, at least my theory is, because they need to be able to have a way to get themselves out of a vicious state. I think we all want to believe that we have the ability to certainly not become sages or perfect. The Stoics said that the sage was like the phoenix, which is, of course, a mythical bird. The sages did not believe in supernatural things. And so they were kind of saying to have virtue, to have perfect moral knowledge relevant to the self, is as uncommon or is as rare as a thing which we know does not exist. Now, a lot of Stoic scholars, I think, would take issue with me saying that, but that is how I've always viewed it. And we need to be able to believe that we can at least educate ourselves towards betterment. We always have room to improve. If we can never be perfect, then that's great news, because we can always get better. And so vice is the absence of the knowledge of virtue, and virtue is that you have possession of it. You have that knowledge. And so it's important to identify them in that way, because it treats evil as ignorance, not as something that is innately attached to us as human beings from a higher power of some kind, but that it is because we are ignorant of what is the good thing to do in our context. And when you phrase evil like that, it does two things that I think are extremely helpful in modern times, and I guess would have been helpful at all times. And that is that, first of all, it prevents you from dehumanizing another person simply because they've acted in a terrible way. And secondly, it allows you to believe, and for even that person to believe, because we've all done things that I think we're not proud of, even if they're very small things. We all have an embarrassing moment or some time where we weren't as honest as we wish we had been, or loyal as we wish we had been. And those things can weigh on you over time, bring you down, and it makes it easier to be more vicious as you go along. But when you understand that virtue is knowledge, well, hey, I can learn. I have a brain. I can think my way out of this. I can become better. Now, of course, that means you have to say that somebody very evil like Hitler could have done that. But Hitler's a very great example of what happens when your understanding of what is good and what is vicious is so warped that it gets worse and worse over time, and you become something that maybe you cannot turn away from. Because certainly there was a point in time where Hitler wasn't what he wound up being, and then more and more viewed the world wronger and wronger. I'm using the word wronger, I probably shouldn't, but wronger and wronger, until he wound up at a place where he was lost in the woods and a terribly evil, vicious person that probably had no chance of redemption at all.
One thing I wanted to talk about too is, you know, you talk about reason and the importance of that, and that is something that human beings are able, all capable of doing. And how does that relate to emotions? Are emotions not as important? I mean, how do emotions have a role in Stoicism?
So one of those misunderstandings about Stoicism in contemporary times is, as I said at the outset, that emotions are bad. We're supposed to get rid of them. It's not realistic. It's also not correct. Emotions are part of our biology. They're part of our evolutionary biology. We have emotions. We also have a rational faculty, a brain. And so when an emotion arises, we could think of it as a primitive emotion, an automated, not automated, but automatic response or reflex. Lightning strikes and we're scared. Or we catch our spouse in an act of infidelity and we're angry. Or we find out that we're not going to get that raise at work that we were promised and we get angry. What the Stoics want us to do with those kinds of emotions, let's say the pathos, the negative emotions, is that as quickly as we possibly can, it's natural to have them, but we want to wrap our hegemonicon, our rational faculty, around them as quickly as we can to ask ourselves, am I mad for good reasons? Of course, being angry is never an appropriate reaction for you to, or is never an appropriate emotion for you to embrace as being correct as far as the Stoics were concerned. We wrap our minds around the emotion and we examine it and we decide what our opinion of that emotion is and whether we want to assent to that opinion. So an example we give in the book is our friend shows up or doesn't show up, is late to a dinner that we're supposed to have. And this friend has been late before. And so we assent to the impression, the emotional response we're having and the thoughts that come with it, that they're just a flake and they don't care about us and this idiot is late again and that sucks. But we don't know that. We have some information to suggest based on previous behavior that that might be true, but let's examine our emotion. We're angry. Why? Because they're late. Okay, well, why are they late? I guess I don't know why they're late. There could have been a car accident. Perhaps the appropriate response here is not anger, but concern. And so emotions act as, I would say, the kindling to, or the nexus point at which, if we use the kindling analogy, we build the fire out of to determine how we're supposed to feel and whether or not our feelings are rational. We're always trying to be rational in whatever emotions we assent to. Now, that doesn't mean that when we decide intellectually that it's not appropriate to be angry at our friend being late to dinner, we don't want it to gain the kind of power over our choices that enables us to make less appropriate and lesser appropriate choices as we go down the rabbit hole of, well, now I'm angry. Well, now I'm going to delete him on Facebook. And now I'm going to unfollow him on Twitter. And now I'm not going to invite him to Christmas dinner, because we have let that emotion get ahead of our rational faculty and take us down a completely irrational response. So emotions are kind of like a fuel that the brain is using, the hegemonicon or the rational faculty is using, to do what the Stoics believe is the unique job of a human mind to do, to reason morally well, and to assent to what you get, to assent to the most logical impressions that you can come up with.
What does a Stoic do when maybe they've been cheated or they've been really treated wrongly in some situation?
Sure. So another misconception is that someone who is Stoic is apathetic. Oh, well, you know, somebody robbed my house and who cares? I'm Stoic. I didn't need those things anyway. Now, the truth is there's some truth to that, in that the Stoic wants to very quickly understand what has been lost. Well, these things were never really mine. They were kind of, you know, I bought a house and it burned down. I can't control those things. This is unfortunate. I wish that it hadn't happened. I do feel negatively about it. This is not the end of my life. Houses can be replaced. This will be difficult. Will I survive? You're having this dialogue with yourself about just trying to keep yourself as level-headed as possible, because again, once you lose control of your response to whatever emotions are arising or events that are happening in your life, you give up whatever control you have, and the only control that we really have as Stoics is the ability to choose. You give up your ability to choose. Your only true thing that you have the ability to choose is choosing.
What is fueling this interest these days in Stoicism?
There are a few things, and some of them not as good as others. There is a general, in social media platforms like TikTok and Twitter and YouTube Shorts and those kinds of environments, there is a hunger by young men to find ways to be masculine and strong and resilient. And not that those things are bad qualities to want to have, but there are people who take Stoicism and present it almost like philosophy as a service to these people who are hungry for that sort of thing. And it's not what Stoicism is. We call that broicism. It's usually men trying to say that in order to be strong, be a Stoic. You don't have emotions, don't fall in love. Tell your wife to stop complaining at you. And that is not Stoicism. So part of it is popular because there is a contingent of online folks who are looking for that thing, and there's another contingent of online creators who are looking to serve those folks with a completely dishonest and unfair and frankly, I would almost say viral in the worst of ways, version of Stoicism. So that's one reason. Another reason is that life is difficult right now. Life is, I've only been alive during this time, but I can remember politics in the 90s and they didn't feel like this. And I can remember international conflict in the world in the 90s and early 2000s. It didn't feel like this. This does seem like a uniquely at odds moment in life. A lot of people feel like they're not being treated fairly. A lot of people think that their cultures are being overwritten. A lot of people are dismissed. A lot of people feel like there's uncertainty in the future with all the automations in technology and AI. I think it's important to say that if you do feel this way, that it's probably the case that those feelings are legitimate in one way or another. It's okay to feel whatever way someone feels, but they're looking for answers. So I think that Stoicism offers this very, I wouldn't say matter of fact, but I would say this very logical way of looking at what we can do, maybe what we ought to do, to get ourselves through in the best way possible this difficult time, how to support others in this difficult time. And it was the same case in Marcus Aurelius's time. Marcus, as an emperor, I think he had something like 9 children, and almost all of them died. His wife was unfaithful. He dealt with plagues. He dealt with the war front. He, as an emperor, certainly was not living a grape-eating, hammock-lounging life. And I think Stoicism was popular during his time in Rome for very similar reasons to why it's popular today. It seems like there's difficult things going on everywhere. And then there are other people who are interested in it as an academic pursuit, who want to learn about the history of this ancient Greek philosophy. And there are some really great thinkers and minds who are tackling that to try to get at the most, let's say, most orthodox take of what Stoicism was when it first started.
What if you are in a relationship with someone and you're a Stoic? Does your partner need to be also into Stoicism?
No, they wouldn't need to be. It could be in the same way that you could be a Christian and your wife might be a Muslim, that there would certainly be some very different ways of looking at the same thing. And you'd have to know how to circumvent, not the right word, but you would have to learn how to approach those things as a married couple. So it can be easier when everyone is on the same philosophical, ideological page. I mean, imagine being a Republican married to a Democrat right now, and what a house that would be. So yeah, there are challenges, and it's always nicer when people are on the same page with these sorts of things, but absolutely not, because the aim of Stoicism is for me, the individual, to acquire the knowledge of virtue and moral appropriate choosing, moral excellence. And that actually doesn't have anything to do with my wife. It does have everything to do with every choice I make. For example, if my wife and I disagree on something, it's not Stoic to say, well, that doesn't affect me. Because what does it say about a person's character when they dismiss their wife's opinion because it's not the same as theirs? That's another misunderstanding about Stoicism, that if someone's opinion or someone's struggle doesn't impact us directly, then we choose to ignore it. But because character is the expression of knowledge, moral knowledge in particular, that means that it's anything that we choose that reflects on our character reflects on what we know about moral or what moral knowledge we have. And so if we choose to ignore our, in this case, because I have a wife, let's say if I choose to ignore my wife because I don't agree with her, that is not Stoic. That is, in fact, unstoic, because it's me choosing to dismiss, and the choice that I have control over. I have the ability to choose whether or not to listen and care about my wife.
Yeah.
Another example is if your family member is ill, certainly you can't control their illness, but I'll bet that you care about your mom if she's got cancer, or your brother if he's very ill. So people who say that you're supposed to not pay attention to or not care about the things you can't control or the things that don't affect you, they have a really poisoned, I would say, understanding of Stoicism.
You know, another thing I want to talk to you about, I think is important, is the relationship of God to Stoicism, and you do face that idea in your book, and you and the co-author have a little different views on that, I guess, but which I found interesting. You talk a little bit about do you have to believe in God to be Stoic?
So I'll take Kai's argument first, because he's not here to share it, so I'll share it for him. And Kai, I'm so sorry if I misquote this in any way, but I think this is correct. Because Stoic logic led to the understanding of Stoic physics, and Stoic physics led to the forming of all of the ethical treatises that the Stoics created. So all of those things that we in contemporary times, we're really holding up Stoic ethics. That's what we're so enamored by in contemporary times. Their ethics are amazing. But those ethics were derived from the physics, which were derived from the logic, which means if you like it, not if you like, but if you think that the ethics are worthwhile, it's a little bit difficult to then say, but the things that led to those ethics, they're not as worthwhile because they're kind of old and dated, and we're talking about the universe as an organism, and that's kind of woo-woo-y, and they talk about God, and I don't like that, but the ethics are cool. Kai would say that kind of punches a bunch of Swiss whole cheese in the justification for liking the ethics, right? And I can definitely see and understand that position, and not really say it's wrong, just say I feel differently about it. I think that you're making a leap of faith, and I don't mean ecclesiastic faith. I mean, you're accepting something you can't prove in a lab when you say Stoic ethics are worth something. And if that is where you plant your flag and say, that's all I need, I just need to know that these ethics seem to work in practice, and that's good enough for me. And so I'm a Stoic, and I'm going to practice these ethics. I'm not really interested in the physics that led to them, the cosmology that led to them, or even the logic that led to them. I just like that these ethics are effectual in contemporary times and in my life in particular, and I feel great practicing it. If that's where you want to plant your flag, I think you can do that. I think that there's a lot more to get out of Stoicism if you go back and say, you know what, let's investigate the cosmology. Let's see what the Stoics' idea of God is. Let's learn Stoic physics. Let's figure out what that was all about. How did they come to their opinion that God was not just an idea, but an observable fact? How can God be an observable fact? I think you can get a lot more out of Stoicism, not by believing those things, but certainly looking into them and trying your best to understand them. That's Kai's opinion.
And it is based on the idea that the universe is good in some respect, right? Otherwise, why would we be good?
That the universe is logical, that the universe is it is an organism, and like any organism, its default configuration is one that perpetuates its ongoing existence. And so Marcus Aurelius says this in some book in Meditation. I'm not very good at quoting those sorts of things, but he says that when you fall out of alignment with your human pursuit of moral excellence, of arete or virtue, you are like an abscess on the universe, because you're out of alignment with what this system that is self-sustaining and is seeking to benefit itself as a whole, not humans in particular, not anything else in particular, but everything together, that you're out of alignment with God. I have come to understand the Stoic God as being a wholly natural thing. In fact, I had a great conversation about this via email just last night, and I'm interested to see where that goes. But the Stoics believe that God was nature. It isn't a he, it isn't a she, it isn't something you pray to or give money to or that has a house of worship. It is nature itself. It is the whole of the universe, and we're all part of it because we make up a portion of the anatomy of the universe. And that is a very different idea of God than most people, if they take issue with God, take issue with. I think if you're an atheist today, what you're mostly taking issue with is that some father figure on high, who's interpreted by some imperfect mortal, is telling you what you're allowed to eat and wear and who you can sleep with and be with and marry. And that's not the Stoic God. In fact, if I could go back in time, I would have stopped them from using that word.
Tanner, thank you and sharing that Marcus Aurelius thought too about nature and the universe. Very beautiful. I'd love to talk longer, and there's a lot more we could explore. There are circles of concern. Yeah, circles of concern. Well, you'll have to read the book to hear more about that. And but we've run out of time for today. Let's be sure to tell our listeners about your website, tannercampbell.net. And that's one word, Tanner, and then Campbell, CampBell.net. Or you can go to What is Stoicism Book? That's one word, whatisstoicismbook.com. And that's where you can learn more about Tanner's work. For those who tuned into the Pathway show late, this is your host, Donald Altman, author of the award-winning spiritual adventure novel, Travelers. My Simply Mindful book series includes Simply Mindful Resilience, Simply Mindful Meal by Meal, the Simply Mindful Coloring Book, and Simply Mindful, a 7-week course and personal handbook for mindful living. Information about my other books, courses, and CDs can be found at mindfulpractices.com. In a second, I'll tell you how you can rewind and replay this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast. Today, we've been visiting with author Tanner Campbell, a leader in the fields of Stoicism and personal growth. I want to say thank you to all our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed via KBOO FM Sunday mornings at 8:30 USA Pacific Time. Podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. And that's spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes and other free podcast servers. This is Donald Altman, along with Pathways host, Paul O'Brien, reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways radio and podcasts. Thanks again to Tanner Campbell and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation. We'll be right back.
listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at kboo.fm.
Do you like discovering new music and reconnecting with some older but perhaps forgotten favorites?